I was writing a label on a jar of red blister a few days later when Siegfried catapulted into the room. He must have kicked the door open because it flew back viciously against the rubber stop and rebounded almost into his face. He rushed over to the desk where I was sitting and began to pound on it with the flat of his hand. His eyes glared wildly from a flushed face.
"I've just come from that bloody swine Holt," he shouted.
"Ned Holt, you mean?"
"Yes, that's what I mean, damn him!"
I was surprised. Mr. Holt was a little man who worked on the roads for the county council. He kept four cows as a sideline, and had never been known to pay a veterinary bill. But he was a cheerful character, and Siegfried had rendered his unpaid services over the years without objection. "One of your favourites, isn't he?" I said.
"Was, by God, was,"
Siegfried snarled.
"I'd been treating Muriel for him. You know, the big red cow second from the far end of the byre? She's had recurrent tympany, coming in from the field every night, badly blown, and I've tried about everything. Nothing did any good. Then it struck me that it might be actinobacillosis of the reticulum. I shot some sodium iodide into the vein, and when I saw her today, the difference was incredible. She was standing there, chewing her cud, right as rain. I was just patting myself on the back for a smart piece of diagnosis, and you know what Holt said? He said he knew she'd be better today because last night he gave her half a pound of Epsom salts in a bran mash. That was what had cured her."
Siegfried took some empty cartons and bottles from his pockets and hurled them savagely into the waste paper basket. He began to shout again.
"Do you know, for the past fortnight I've puzzled and worried and damn nearly dreamt about that cow. Now I've found the cause of the trouble, applied the most modern treatment, and the animal has recovered. And what happens? Does the owner express his grateful thanks for my skill? Does he, hell? The entire credit goes to half a pound of Epsom salts. What I did was a pure waste of time."
He dealt the desk another sickening blow.
"But I frightened him, James," he said, his eyes staring. "By God, I frightened him. When he made that crack about the salts, I yelled out, 'You bugger!' And I made a grab for him. I think I would have strangled him, but he shot into the house and stayed there. I didn't see him again."
Siegfried threw himself into a chair and began to churn his hair about.
"Epsom salts," he groaned. "Oh, God, it makes you despair."
I thought of telling him to relax, and pointing out that it would all be the same in 100 years. But my employer still had an empty serum bottle dangling from one hand. I discarded the idea. Then there came the day when Siegfried decided to have my car reboard. It had been using a steady 2 pints of oil a day, and he hadn't thought this excessive. But when he got to half a gallon a day, he felt something ought to be done. What probably decided him was a farmer on market day saying he always knew when the young vet was coming because he could see the cloud of blue smoke miles away. When the tiny Austin came back from the garage, Siegfried fussed around it like an old hen.
"Come over here, James," he called. "I want to talk to you."
I saw he was looking patient again, and braced myself.
"James," he said, pacing round the battered vehicle, whisking specks from the paintwork. "You see this car?"
I nodded.
"Well, it has been reboard, James. Reboard at great expense. And that's what I want to talk to you about. You now have in your possession what amounts to a new car."
With an effort, he unfastened the catch, and the bonnet creaked open in a shower of rust and dirt. He pointed down at the engine, black and oily, with the unrelated pieces of flex and rubber tubing hanging around it like garlands.
"You have a piece of fine mechanism here, and I want you to treat it with respect. I've seen you belting along like a maniac, and it won't do. You've got to nurse this machine for the next 2,000 or 3,000 miles. 30 miles an hour is quite fast enough. I think it's a crime the way some people abuse a new engine. They should be locked up. So remember, lad, no flogging or I'll be down on you."
He closed the bonnet with care, gave the cracked windscreen a polish with the cuff of his coat, and left. These strong words made such an impression on me that I crawled around the visits all day, almost at walking pace. The same night I was getting ready for bed when Siegfried came in. He had 2 farm lads with him, and they both wore silly grins. A powerful smell of beer filled the room. Siegfried spoke with dignity, slurring his words only slightly.
"James, I met these gentlemen in the Black Bull this evening. We have had several excellent games of dominoes, but unfortunately, they've missed the last bus. Will you kindly bring the Austin round, and I will run them home.
I drove the car to the front of the house, and the farm lads piled in, one in the front, the other in the back. I looked at Siegfried lowering himself unsteadily into the driving seat, and decided to go along. I got into the back. The two young men lived in a farm far up on the North Moors, and 3 miles out of town, we left the main road and our headlights picked up a strip of track twisting along the dark hillside. Siegfried was in a hurry. He kept his foot on the boards. The note of the engine rose to a tortured scream, and the little car hurtled on into the blackness. Hanging on grimly, I leant forward so that I could shout into my employer's ear.
"Remember, this is the car which has just been reboard!"
I bellowed above the din. Siegfried looked round with an indulgent smile.
"Yes, yes, I remember, James. What are you fussing about?"
As he spoke, the car shot off the road and bounded over the grass at 60 miles an hour. We all bounced around like corks till he found his way back. Unperturbed, he carried on at the same speed. The silly grins had left the lads' faces, and they sat rigid in their seats. Nobody said anything. The passengers were unloaded at a silent farmhouse, and the return journey began. Since it was downhill all the way, Siegfried found he could go even faster. The car leapt and bumped over the uneven surface with its engine whining. We made several brief but tense visits to the surrounding moors, but we got home. It was a month later that Siegfried had occasion to take his assistant to task once more.
"James, my boy," he said sorrowfully, "you're a grand chap, but by God, you're hard on cars. Look at this Austin. Newly reboard a short time ago in tip-top condition, and look at it now. Drinking oil. I don't know how you did it in the time. You're a real terror."